Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It is Thursday, the 25th of April, 2024. Damn, it's Thursday. It's almost Friday. We're going to get there. I'm Derek Hunter. This is the Derek Hunter Podcast, and boy, howdy. Action-packed program for you again today, and really getting pissed off already at the start of the wind-up time for the Weekend Effin' Review at patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast or DerekHunter.locals.com. Please, s'il vous plaît, I think I bumped the microphone, check out patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. Sign up to support the program. Just a little bit goes a long way. The more of you, the better. But I appreciate and I'm eternally grateful for all of the support. It lets me know that you're listening. You can always email me, too, DerekAllenHunter@gmail.com, and I'll get back to you as best I can. Sometimes people send me really long emails. Make it short emails, and I'll respond as quickly as I can. And I respond usually quickly to those, but I'm obsessed with checking my email. It's a problem. Anyway, God, let's just call it a weekend already, can't we? Anyway, let us get started so we can then get back together on Friday and, I don't know, drink some beers or whatever. We got a lot of stuff going on, a bunch of things to get to. The protests, the riots, the university takeovers continue, because why not? It is amazing to me how spineless leadership is and what passes for leadership, how spineless it can be. And you sit there and you watch these people crumble. I don't know that there's a single university president out there that isn't a paper bag when it comes to leadership. Just a folding table. They just collapse under their own weight, basic weight. The president of Columbia University is somebody named Minoush Shafik. And I'm sure she was hired because she is super qualified and the most qualified. She originally said, hey, you're not going to be camping out here. None of that crap. Sent the police in to clean out the area, and more students showed up. And immediately, she folded. Never sent the police in a second time. Never shut down the area. Could easily have shut down the area. Just said, hey, put up barricades. This open space is now closed space, and get out. Anybody who goes in there, arrest them. Anybody who goes in there, expel them. If they're not university students, charge them with trespassing. That's it. Now, I get it that the prosecutors in New York likely wouldn't do anything about the charges, but you could make somebody's life annoying, make it a hassle at a minimum. Maybe even at a maximum, but whatever. Yet that's not what Ms. Shafik did. She did nothing. They came back. It's like, oh my God, we've got termites. All right, well, let's spray. And they drill the holes in the floor and they spray. And then a week later, there are more termites. Oh, wait, there are termites someplace else. And you just kind of throw up your arms and go, well, these little guys are really determined. I don't know what else we can do. Let's try and negotiate with the termites. Let's try and keep them over in that corner, et cetera, et cetera. And you just think, no. Now, what is the interview process for these university presidents? What is that like? What do you suspect that is like? It can't be all that much. It can't be all that difficult. It can't be tough. It can't be anything, honestly. If confronted with anything, how quickly, like a cheap table, will you fold? Well, I can start folding for you now. I always come to every event with a pre-written apology in my pocket. And I have several of them, actually. One for being male, one for being white, one for being tall, one for being stunningly good-looking. And another one just because I used an unfortunate word that, you know, was based off of the way that every human being up until about 28 seconds ago understood that word to mean. But now I apologize unreservedly. I'm ready to go no matter what happens. Ooh, that's good. Very good. You get the job. It is, that seems to be what it is. It has to be what it is. I don't know how else you fail so badly, so miserably at your job when your job is basically, you're an administrator. You just maintain order. You just maintain the status quo. And they don't do it. So these idiots out there, this from the UK Daily Mail, Colombia's under fire president, Manoj Shafiq, buckles and gives an extra 48 hours to clear camp after anti-Israel demo refused to budge. Now protesters call on comrades to create platoons amid calls for the National Guard to be sent in. I love how, well, we've got to treat everybody the same, everybody this, everybody that, and like, you know, you have protected classes, you have safe spaces, should, God forbid, somebody misgender somebody. Should somebody standing at the urinal notice the penis on the woman at the urinal next to them and say, hey, dude, how's it going? Oh, no, they've forever scarred me. Might I posit that if you are so fragile, if your psyche is so fragile that you crumble like a house of cards upon somebody noticing reality, that you are in desperate need of mental health assistance, and all of the lies in the world will not help you. They will not. But they, when it comes to Jews walking across campus, people screaming, we are Hamas, river to the sea, exterminate the Jews, intifada, intifada. Oh, no, that's okay. That's okay. Look, that's just a free speech issue. So, you know, biology is not a free speech issue. Reality is not a free speech issue. But somehow somebody's saying, I'm going to kill. Now, you go up to any other, well, that's not true. You could go up to white people and say, I hate you and want to kill you because of your skin color. And you could probably get away with it in New York with Asians, too, to be honest with you. Democrats are very, very committed to the very, very selective outrage that they have. Remember, you beat the hell out of all the Asians. They didn't really seem to care about that. So, but you go up to some other group that Democrats do care about. I think the tipping point is probably about 60. You have to vote about 60% for Democrats. Then they'll care about you. It's a price of admission, just a little chunk of your soul. But you do that, and suddenly they will be going, oh, my goodness, we must stop this. There needs to be teach-ins, sit-ins. We need to have discussions, whatever it is, you name it. Some junkie overdoses, and a cop was arresting them at the time, and suddenly it is all hands on deck. Somebody threatens a Jew. Well, that's just a day that ends in Y, and they probably were on their way to commit genocide anyway, so it's justified. But the president keeps on moving the barrier, and this is the problem. I don't really care what line you draw as long as what line you draw is the line drawn. If you stick with it, you know, Barack Obama drew, that'll be a red line for me if they use chemical weapons. And Syria used chemical weapons. Well, we're not to think about that. And I'm not sure. Depends on which kind of chemical weapons and how many people were killed. And like, was it a line or was it not a line? You can just say you don't care. It'd be much easier, more to the point. UK Daily Mail, Colombia's embattled president, Manoj Shafiq, has crumbled under pressure from pro-Palestine protesters and given them a 48-hour extension to disperse after they ignored the original deadline. Isn't that nice? You're negotiating against yourself. You want to know a sign of weakness? Find somebody who negotiates against themselves. It comes as demonstrators claim school officials threaten to call the National Guard to the campus, which has been besieged by demonstrations since last Wednesday. Well, yeah, they should call the National Guard. People are paying $60,000 a year just in tuition, another, what, 30 for room and board, and they've announced that they are going virtual, or at least encouraging students to go virtual for the rest of the semester. Now, it's only a couple of weeks, but still, did you sign up for this? Did you pay for this? Do you really think a face on a screen? I mean, how many Jeffrey Toobin moments are we looking at there? Potential lawsuits. But do you really think that is what these kids signed up for? What these parents, who are the ones who are paying for it, are signed up for? Hey, you know what? You get a big Zoom call. You get the University of Phoenix online for Columbia prices. It's a bargain. It's wonderful. You do it. It's Kaplan at caviar prices. It's because of this worthless president saying clear the area by tomorrow or else, and then she said, okay, well, I'll give you another 48 hours. Doesn't take that long to fold up a tent. And I promise you, they're not really going to fold up their tents all that much. Most of those tents are exactly the same model. They're just slightly different colors because somebody went into a Dick's Sporting Goods and bought all of them. Somebody is funding this. We don't know who, but somebody is funding this. They went into a Dick's Sporting Goods, bought all the tents. These are like $500 a piece tents, and there's, you know, dozens of them out there. And the kids don't give a damn about them. They're not going to, they're going to New York. They're in Columbia. They're not going to go camping anytime soon. They give them to home. Now, they probably wouldn't even give them to homeless people. They just leave them there to rot. And the city or the school will come along and grind them up. They don't want the homeless people sleeping in them on the streets any more than they want kids sleeping in them on the campus. It'd be nice to see if Congress would go and, I don't know, subpoena some of these people and find out and get the FBI involved, find out where these monies are coming from. They could. It's electronic transfers. They're not operating in cash. But anyway, back to the story. It comes as demonstrators claim school officials, blah, blah, blah. In the wake of the alleged threat, one activist called on members of the protest group to, quote, break up into platoons, end quote, in order to defend the encampment. Please, do the world a favor and fight the National Guard. Do the world a favor and fight the National Guard. It'd be, you know, I'll pay a subscription fee to watch that. Shafiq capitulated after her midnight deadline came and went with no real signs of the camp dispersing. Say, midnight, get out of there by midnight. Nobody was camping. Nobody was packing up. Nobody was nothing. Instead, a spokesman for the school told CBS that the protesters received an additional 2 days to move after a constructive dialogue where they pledged to remove a significant number of tents and any non-students from the demonstration. It's either legal to camp on campus or it's not legal to camp on campus. If it's not legal to camp on campus, it doesn't matter whether or not you have a student ID. You are violating the law. You are violating school policy at a minimum. They don't care. On Tuesday night, it was reported that NYPD counterterrorism officers were mobilizing to close the protest. At least two Republican senators, Josh Hawley and Tom Cotton, called on President Joe Biden to bring in the National Guard to campuses nationwide where Jewish students claim they feel threatened by a growing number of protests. Missouri Senator Hawley told the president that he must act on his Passover statement, in which he said, quote, we've seen harassment and calls for violence against Jews. This blatant anti-Semitism is reprehensible and dangerous. You must immediately mobilize the National Guard and any other authorities necessary to ensure the safety of Jewish American students and citizens, Hawley wrote. There is precedent for the president calling on the National Guard. In 1957, President Dwight D. Eisenhower called in troops, as well as the 101st Airborne Division, to protect black students attending Central High School in Arkansas. Meanwhile, Senator Cotton of Arkansas remarked specifically on the protests at Columbia, calling them nascent pogroms. Quote, if Eric Adams won't send in the NYPD and Kathy Hochul won't send in the National Guard, and Kathy Hochul won't send in the National Guard, we have a duty to take charge and break up these mobs, Cotton said. But they won't. They keep kicking the can down the road. A deadline is a deadline. If a politician, if a person doesn't do what they say they'll do, you cross a line, whatever it is, you know you can't, it's not you can't trust them. It's that you don't have to take them seriously. You don't have to take them seriously at all. And I will say, I'll tell a story. It's a little bit gross, but it's worthwhile. It's about when I was working at Best Buy. Just to, not to pat myself on the back, but it is one of those moments where you could either do something, say something, do something you said you would do to be taken seriously, or not do it and recognize that that person would never take you seriously again, and you probably shouldn't be taken seriously. I was working at Best Buy in Detroit. It was Christmas time. I was there as a Christmas job. I was selling TVs. I had to go to the bathroom. Number two, the toilet was clogged. It was overflowing clogged. It was, you know, clogged, and then somebody tried to flush their way out of it. It just wasn't going to work, and it was up to the top. So I couldn't even, if I wanted to, done my business there. So I go to the back, the warehouse, where a guy named Kelly, who was in charge of the warehouse, was also in charge of maintenance. Now, if the plunger had been sitting there, I'd have done it myself. But it wasn't. I don't know where he kept it. It wasn't out for the public. The bathroom was open to the public. So I come back and I said, hey, you know, toilet's clogged. Gotta go to the bathroom. Toilet's clogged. Could you get that unplugged? Oh, yeah, sure. No problem. Great. Go back to work. 15 minutes later, go back to the bathroom. Nothing changed. Go into Kelly's room in the warehouse again. It was out in the open. Hey, nobody's plunged it. What's the deal? Oh, yeah. No. I'll get him on that. Don't worry about it. Okay, 10 more minutes go by, nothing changed. Finally go back, Kelly's putting on his jacket, he's getting ready to leave for the day. It was a Friday, he's getting ready to leave for the day. And I said, dude, like, you got to get, it's now becoming an imperative, okay? You've got to plunge this toilet. If you don't plunge, he goes, don't worry about it, I'll do it. And I said, if you don't do it, I'm going to use a character, trying to put this in terms that I can say here, but in friendly terms, if you don't do it, I'm going to use a box and I'm going to put it on your desk, right? That's the deal. Like, it's happening. Ha ha, he laughed. Don't worry, we'll get it done. Another 10 minutes goes by, he's gone, he walks out, and he's not taking care of it. Nobody's taking care of it. So I walk back into the garbage area, I grab a cardboard box, I grab a tape gun, if you know what a tape gun is, and tape it up, put in some styrofoam in there, some packages, went, put it on the toilet, did my business. I had to go. There was no more time. It wasn't like there was a private employee restroom someplace or I could have gone into the ladies' room. I would have been fired. It was busy. It was Christmas time. Plus, the toilet needed to be plunged. It was busy. It was Christmas time. Did my business, taped it up, walked back to the warehouse. Probably about 10 feet away, I threw it onto Kelly's desk. It landed there. The guys who worked in the warehouse for Kelly kind of looked like, yeah, right, whatever. One of them walks over, picks it up and shakes it and drops it like it bit him. You could tell by, I guess, the way it shook and the way he just said, oh, my God, you can't leave that there. He's not back until Monday. I said, I don't care. I told him I was going to do it if he didn't get the toilet plunged. You guys are the ones that are supposed to plunge the toilet. Nobody did it. So it's on you. It's on the desk. Said, no, you can't. Please don't. And they started begging. I said, all right, I'll tell you what. If I throw it away, will you tell them I did it? Don't believe me. We'll tell them you did it. We'll tell them. So just then, one of the managers called Jeff comes back. You had to have a key to open the dumpster. It was a compactor. It went through a lot of boxes. And also people would throw stuff into the garbage, I'd imagine, and then come back later and steal it. So he's standing there, and I said, Jeff, can you open up the dumpster, the compactor? And he says, yeah, and he sees me holding a taped-up box. And he says, what's in the box? And I says, feces. And he stops for a second, and he says, I don't even want to know. And he opens it up, opens the door. I throw it out there, and he locks it back up again. And from that moment on, anything I asked Kelly for got done. Got done immediately because Kelly knew that I was serious. I don't know what I would have said next. I don't know where you take it from there. But I think a repeat would have been enough. But he knew that I was not going to be messing around. Like, this needs to be, it's your damn job. It's the university president's job to maintain order on the university. If you give a deadline, or we're going to clean you out, and you don't, they know that they don't have to take you seriously. They know not to take you seriously, as a matter of fact. They know that you will cave at a moment's notice. No matter what, you'll fold like a cheap suit. Oh, no. Well, all right, I'll give you another 48 hours. I'll give you another 48 hours. What are we looking at? We're looking at Friday now? Why would there be a midnight deadline? You have to be kind of stupid to do that, too. You don't want this stuff to take place in the dark. You want the, well, we're afraid of bad PR. What if police go through and they're arresting students and students resist and then students are, you know, being hurt? And students are going to whine and cry no matter what. You lay one finger on them and they're going to claim that they just got stabbed. That's just what they do. Buckle up, Buttercup. You got to man up on this thing. And if you can't, you shouldn't be in that job. You go in daylight so that everything is well lit. Nothing is hidden. Everybody can see what it is. It's the ultimate transparency. It's the greatest disinfectant and the ultimate transparency. Show everything that's going on. Watch police move these people under lawful orders and watch them refuse. Watch them fight back. Watch them claim to be being hurt as they are zip-tied up. And then the policy of the university should be that anybody who is not a university student will be charged with trespassing, period, end of story. You maybe give them 4 hours to get their stuff and get out. All right, there you go. Come to terms with it. It's noon. By 4 o'clock, you're out. By 6 o'clock, this place is going to be mowed. This place is going to be empty. And we're going to put up barricades so none of you mutants can get back in here. And, oh, by the way, anybody still here in 4 hours will be arrested and charged with trespassing if you're not a student, and will be expelled if you are a student. Not suspended, expelled. And then you got to stick to it. You can't go, oh, geez, we should probably, that's a little bit harsh. No, expel them. If you're not comfortable with that, then a suspension for the rest of the year, so this semester was a complete and total waste, and they have to spend another $30,000 to make it up or something. Whatever. The consequences have to be severe. They have to be harsh. But, of course, to be able to make severe consequences, to make harsh consequences, to get the toilet plunged, you have to be known as somebody who will actually go and take care of their business in a box, who actually will go and expel or suspend students and cost them the entire semester. And then we find out how dedicated these kids are to the cause. If they're dedicated to the cause, well, congratulations, you get to be a martyr for it. But I promise you, a couple of people being expelled as they're walking toward you, it's going to cause you to get your backpack and get the hell out of Dodge as quickly as possible. Reality, when actually people are forced to deal with it, forced to face consequences for their actions, which is a foreign concept to far too many of these college students, either because they come from money or whatever. Watching reality smack them upside the head, watching consequences come down on them like a ton of bricks. You want to have some fun. That'll be fun to watch. I got this email, and it's a brilliant email. It's from Tom, Thomas. I don't know if he goes by Tom or Thomas, but the email says Thomas. And he makes a good point. And it's one of those points where, you know, I wish I'd thought of it. And I could have stolen it. I'm not going to steal it. It's his. But he writes and he says, I find it interesting that whenever anyone mentions instigators or plants on January 6th, they're conspiracy theorists. But now everyone from AOC to Joy Behar is insisting that these peaceful / pizza party protests have been hijacked, probably by the Proud Boys. He's right, except for about the Proud Boys part. They're infiltrated. They don't really say who it is. It's when you're dealing with conspiratorial people, the less information you give, the better. You need the minds of the dumb people you're trying to convince to your side. You need them to fill in the blanks because then it becomes personal. That's just, you know, there's your lesson in daily manipulation. You vagaries with some specifics that point in directions, but you never say, it was them, it was Colonel Mustard in the study with the rope. No. You let people draw their own conclusions. That way, everybody wins and everybody believes it if you're not interested in telling the truth. And clearly, these people are not interested in people learning the truth. But it's right. You point out that hey, the FBI won't say how many undercover agents. Well, we can't say blah, blah, blah. Well, that seems a little weird. Was anybody out there, the people saying, hey, let's go to the Capitol. Let's go. Was anybody on the FBI's radar, playlist, whatever, payroll, nothing? Can't say. It's an ongoing investigation. Well, it's amazing how these things just go on forever, don't they? It's an ongoing, and couldn't possibly comment on it. Oh, great. So you can't be held accountable for misdeeds in an investigation because it's ongoing, and all you have to do is keep it going forever, and you can therefore never be held accountable for it. It's a hell of a thing. But the left is out there saying, no, the people who are saying the bad stuff, we're only responsible for the good stuff. Which their idea of good stuff is also bad stuff. But the people who are saying we are Hamas, Intifada forever, from the river to the sea, those people, those are infiltrated. They're not really students. It's a different group of people entirely. Who are they then? Well, we don't know for sure. There's a thing I retweeted this morning. It's a sign or a sticker or something. It says it's got the Palestinian flag there. And it's done up like the, looks like a little bumper sticker or flyer. It says, rape is resistance. Free Palestine by any means necessary. Now, it's professionally printed. It's not somebody took a couple of Sharpies and some Crayola markers to a piece of poster board. This is, looks like some kind of sticker that you, a bumper sticker or whatever. This is who they are. This is what they are. You look at the pre-printed signs. There was a report yesterday of some people showing up and dumping down piles of pre-printed signs. Free Palestine, Zionists, go home, whatever, and a bunch of them. And they slapped them down, and all the students started coming up and just grabbing them. It is the social event of the season. It is a testament. Do I think that most of these people, by the way, who are involved in this are really, truly, genuinely anti-American, anti-Semitic? I think they think they are. I don't think they've really thought through the consequences of it. I think that an expulsion or a suspension would give them the time to do that. I still don't have any sympathy for it. I don't really care if you commit murder through malice or benign neglect. Murder is murder. But you know, if you are just stumbling to this because it's the cool thing to do and you're not really thinking about it, and if you are asked, what does from the river to the sea mean? Where is a place for Israel? There's not a single human being there talking about a two-state solution. So what becomes of the Jews there? And you don't have an answer because you've never given it any thought. I still don't have any sympathy for you if your life is ruined over this. You've decided to do this. Remember the there was a Saturday Night Live skit about this that's just sort of resurfaced about a girl. Seems like she's going off to college. Her dad's dropping her off at what looks like the airport. And, oh, man, I'm going to miss you. And then it's from 2015. And then up he goes, oh, here comes your ride. And up comes a pickup truck full of ISIS. And they got the guns and they got the signs and the flag and everything. And there was a phenomenon of people, young girls mostly, and in the UK largely, sneaking off to join to be sort of concubines for ISIS, being seduced by ISIS online. And you sit there and you kind of feel bad for them. They've been sold a wild bill of goods, and you're like, oh, Jesus. But then on the other hand, if by the age of 15 you don't understand what these 15 is not, and I don't expect you to be able to rationally get the policies and the belief system, but you should recognize good versus bad, good versus evil. If you can't do that and you sneak off, or the 17-year-old or whatever, I don't have any sympathy for you. It's horrible, it's heartless, it's whatever. I don't care what you want to call me. You're just too damn stupid for me to care about. Honestly, you're going to get an education, and these girls did, and a couple of them were, like, refused entry back into the UK after, like, a couple years of in captivity where they were used as sex slaves. Like, oh, it's horrible what these girls went through. They weren't grabbed off the street. They snuck away. They got seduced online. They were dumb enough to fall for that sort of thing. It's like watching the Catfish show, or, like, I've sent her about $40,000, and I think she might have been lying to me. Really? You think so? Yeah, she's never talked to me on the phone. She's never video chatted with me. And she's only ever sent me one picture. And it was clearly an advertisement for The Gap because it said The Gap right across it. And like, oh, maybe you've been taken for this. Maybe you have. I can't have sympathy for that person. That just look at it and you go, somebody was going to take you for something. You're that stupid. Somebody was going to get you. You kind of kick yourself going, why didn't I think of a way to get at least 10 grand out of that? I actually knew, I had a friend, I was a friend of a friend, an older guy who fell for all this crap. And he'd show me pictures of these South American women like, oh, now they love me. You ever met her? No. She couldn't come up. There's a reason she can't. She can't. You're offering to fly her to the United States from third world hellhole. She loves you. But she can't leave for whatever reason to come up for a weekend or anything. But she needs like just $500 this time. Just $500. It's like you're dumb. You're dumb. I can't help you if you're dumb. People can be protected from a lot of things. You can't be protected from yourself. You can't. You have to learn that lesson for yourself. You have to learn the hot stove lesson yourself. Not the from the actual stove, but from yourself. And this guy eventually passed. It was not a very healthy person. He passed away. But, I don't think he ever learned that lesson. I don't think he ever learned that lesson. These kids on this campus, they have every opportunity to learn this lesson. They have every single opportunity to learn this lesson right now by being held responsible, by being forced to deal with consequences. Yet they won't. We have people desperately scrambling from members of Congress to the media trying to say, oh, no, these the people, they've been infiltrated. They've been this, they've been that, they've been the other thing. It's not, no, not these sweet, sweet, nourishing things are trying to justify what they're doing. Trying to justify what they're doing. Let's listen to Ilhan Omar here. Because this is the latest tactic. They're convinced that they found a mass grave in Gaza. And they want a thorough investigation because it's proof that the Jews are committing genocide. I'll tell you one thing. If you are quick to believe the worst about your opponent without thought, without proof, without evidence, if you're quick to preach it, it's a testament to what you're willing to do. It really, truly is. It's just you're trying to justify your horrible actions to yourself. See, if you're just a rabid anti-Semite who doesn't like Jews, that's a problem. But if Israel is committing genocide, why then you're not an anti-Semite. You don't hate Jews for no good reason. You have a problem with Israel because they're committing genocide. And then you'd say, well, why don't you protest China's committing genocide? Well, it's different. Why didn't you protest any of the other genocides that were going? Well, that's different. Why didn't you care about the slaughter of Syrians by Bashar al-Assad? Why didn't you take to the streets for that? It's different. You know, there's always a common denominator that the only thing that really motivates these people is it's something that America is doing and its own national interest, or something Israel is doing in its own national interest. Then they care deeply. Nobody takes to the streets over what the mullahs in Iran are doing. But anyway, listen to Ilhan Omar. She was at the University of Minnesota, I think it was. She's where she represents her district, talking about this idea of a giant mass grave.
Honor of representing this incredible university in Congress. And I have to tell you, I am incredibly moved by your courage and bravery as a student body in putting your bodies on the line to stand in solidarity to end the genocide that is taking place in Gaza at this moment. I have to tell you, it's been incredibly painful for the last 5 days to see the discovery, while there is a discovery of a mass grave of more than 200 Palestinians in Khan Yunis, that our media, our elected politicians, our president, every single leader is spending their time and energy in talking about the protests as if you all are not here to give voice to the genocide that is taking place in Gaza.
Gaza, Gaza. You could move there, Ilhan. I'm sure they'd represent, they'd elect you. They probably wouldn't like your husband very much, or the fact you've had three of them. They might be into that one of them was your brother, but I mean, other than that. But oh my God, this mass grave. You're giving voice to the genocide while everybody's ignoring it because it's a BS story, right? That's the problem. You don't really have an argument here. Here's the story. Hamas officials in Gaza claimed on Saturday to discover a mass grave with more than 200 bodies at a hospital in Khan Yunis that was recently the target of a military raid. The officials claimed the dead were buried in mass graves by Israeli forces, but evidence suggests that this claim is false, with the bodies having been previously buried at the same location by Palestinians amid the fighting between Israeli forces and terror operatives in the area. The Israeli Defense Forces on Tuesday rejected Hamas's allegations as baseless. It said forces searching for Israeli hostages had examined the bodies previously buried by Palestinians near Nasser Hospital and had returned the bodies to where they were buried after they were examined. So they're looking for hostages. Palestinians bury their dead in this area from the hospital, from anybody who dared question them. So you get killed. Right? There's no like, how dare you question? It's not, they just kill you. Who are you to question me? No, you're dead. It had been documented that Palestinians buried their dead at the hospital grounds both before and while Israeli troops operated in the area. The location of that burial site was geolocated by experts to the same location where Hamas officials claimed to have discovered the new mass grave. It is weird how they just knew where to go, isn't it? It's weird how they just knew where to go. Huh. Hey, over there, under that, not that pile of rubble, this pile of rubble. Here's the mass grave. Generally, the IDF does not tend to the bodies of slain Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. The United Nations Rights Office claimed that some of the bodies were, quote, found with their hands tied and stripped of their clothes, end quote. The IDF, in its response, said that during its operations in the area of Nasser Hospital in recent months, troops examined corpses that had been buried by Palestinians on the medical center's grounds, quote, as part of their effort to locate the hostages. See, if you're looking for people, you want to know whether or not they're alive or dead. To find out if they're alive, you look and you see if you can find them while they're alive. To find out if they're dead, you check the piles of dead bodies that the terrorists have been throwing out for years, people who crossed them, who displeased them. The military said it had operated in a targeted manner only where it had intelligence and that Israeli hostages had been buried. Quote, the examinations were carried out in an orderly manner while maintaining the dignity of the deceased in a respectful manner, end quote, the IDF said, adding that the bodies were, quote, returned to the place in an orderly and properly manner, end quote. No bodies of hostages were located. It goes on from there, but you get the idea. It is an opportunity for Hamas to claim outrage. It is an opportunity for the anti-Semitic left to glom onto. They're losing the PR battle, in part because of these mutants screaming at people as they just try to go about their business that they basically want them dead. So they thought they had a victory. Well, it's a mass grave. It's a mass grave. Why were there no pictures of Israeli soldiers throwing these people in mass graves? Cell phone technology exists, even in a third world pit controlled by terrorists like Gaza. People could take images of this. None of them did. Why in daylight or even at night this would have been done. Nobody said anything about it. Nobody tried to make any claims about it until it became politically useful for them. Right? It's weird, isn't it? Seems weird to me. And then you've got useful idiots over here in the United States repeating these lies. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has repeated this lie. Ilhan Omar has repeated this lie. In fact, every member of the Goon Squad has repeated this lie. Why? Because they need the distraction. Maybe they're dumb enough to believe it. I don't know. But they need the distraction. The alternative is their rabid anti-Semitism is completely unjustified. Right? These are the people who immediately believed that Israel had bombed a hospital and killed 500 people in the most densely populated hospital on the face of the earth. I don't know. It'd be like one hospital, one bomb, 500 people killed. That lie went around the world. Nobody thought, boy, that's a huge bomb. Or a very small hospital, a lot of people packed into it. And it turns out, what? It was an errant rocket from Hamas itself that landed in the parking lot. Big difference. Nobody killed versus 500 killed. The 500 killed was reported. The nobody was killed was corrected later on, about a week later. Nobody bothered to check it at the time because that would be too much like work. Same thing here with the charges of a mass grave. Oh, my goodness, they're lining up Palestinians and just killing them. Yeah. So they're arresting members of Hamas and they're just randomly shooting women? There is one side in this war that randomly shoots women, randomly rapes women, randomly murders children. It ain't the Israeli Defense Forces. It's the people that these little mutants have gone camping to support. Never forget that. Now, I want to play you a couple of clips from CNN. Jonah Goldberg is a refugee over at CNN. Sometimes I feel bad about Jonah, but then I realize and I remember my interactions with Jonah and like, ugh, it couldn't have happened to a more deserving guy. He is arrogant. He's arrogant. He's just very arrogant. It's not to say he's not smart, but he's not as smart as he thinks he is. But then no one is. But he lost his mind over Donald Trump. He's one of those people that just got the Trump derangement syndrome and it metastasized and infected every organ in his body. And you're just like, dude, okay, I get it. You don't like the guy. The guy says a lot of stuff where you're just like, come on, man, you should... You probably should have phrased that better, or maybe you shouldn't have gone there, or whatever. But it doesn't matter, because what he did as president was a lot of, if not all the things, not all the things, but all were all things that you claimed you desperately wanted to see, that you were in absolute 100% support of before. There was no caveat in your writings. By the way, all of these policy desires are null and void should somebody I dislike personally or find morally repugnant be the one who tries to implement them. I missed that caveat. So Jonah left Fox and then spent a lot of time bitching about Fox and naturally ended up over at CNN because that's how it works. And he was on with somebody from the New York Times named Lulu Garcia Navarro. Lulu Garcia Navarro is billed as a journalist. She's billed as a journalist and a podcast host over at the New York Times. Lulu. I don't think that's her birth name. But she's an adult, despite the fact that she goes by Lulu. And Jonah Goldberg is finding himself a lone man on an island over there. Largely because he's looking at what's going on at Columbia, and he grew up in Manhattan, I believe. And you watch this stuff and you go, what the hell? Why isn't anybody saying anything about this obvious, blatant, clear, unambiguous anti-Semitism that's happening here? I don't know why he thought that anybody on the left would. He's been paying. He wrote the book Liberal Fascism, for God's sakes. He's surprised. And so he has a very interesting exchange here with Lulu Garcia Navarro, who is, let's just say, sympathetic to the cause of the mutant mob.
Look, I think the anti-Semitism stuff, particularly Passover, is a big issue. It's a legitimate issue to talk about. It's a serious issue. And I think there's a lot of anti-Semitic stuff going on out there. But when you're saying you're Hamas, when you're praising Hamas, when you're praising Hezbollah, when you're saying you're going to globalize the Intifada.
Excuse me. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but there. Everyone,
I'm going to finish my point. It means you're pro-terrorist. If you are celebrating Hamas, you're a pro-terrorist.
I'm not disputing that. What
okay,
I'm saying.
That's my point.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is there are selective quotes that are being taken, often not from students themselves. In the encampments in Colombia, they have said this. There are Jewish students who are actually part of this. And they are being used to say, wait, let me finish my point. No,
though,
that's
but,
true. But I just would say more broadly, when people are calling for action, like Representative Gottheimer, what are they actually calling for? You've already had police go on.
If the people in those encampments, whether they're Columbia students or not, if the university can clear them from that encampment, then that is something the university can do.
But they've already put, let me just say how we got here. Columbia chose to bring police to clear the encampment that inflamed the situation to where now you're seeing these protests spread to Yale, to New York University, and beyond.
Now you love that. Let me just say, no. The police, the Columbia caused the, she can't get an argument out. She doesn't have an argument. She just knows she can't say what she wants to say, which is, but I don't like Israel. So Columbia made it worse. How did Columbia make it worse? By, you know, enforcing the law and standards and stuff? Oh, yeah, sorry. That's a good. I didn't realize that Columbia had escalated the situation. Realize that that's escalating the situation. So what, you go and you rob a bank and you're walking out with a wad of cash and then the police come up and say, hey, you can't walk out with that lot of cash. Did the police just then escalate the situation? Oh, no. You need to de-escalate this situation, officer. You need to go away. You need to apologize. You probably should give me your wallet while you're going away. But how dare you escalate this situation? You've become a part of the problem, officer. Go home and think about what you've done here today and hang your head in shame. Now, what is next in this next clip is this New York Times employee, this liberal in good standing, the Lulu Garcia Navarro. I have to say it, Garcia Navarro, because it's hyphenated. Lulu Garcia Navarro does what the left does constantly. They do it in print. They do it in arguments on cable television. She screws up a little here. And she, this is why I isolated this one, because it's a crystallization of how these people work, of how these people think. She says, I, and then she realizes that she can't speak. She wants to say something that she doesn't want to, like, professionally, she wants to have an arm's length between her and this, even though it's what she really believes. And so she throws in, and you'll see this a lot from the left. People say this, they don't cite who these people say. You see, this is the basis for a lot of what passes for news stories these days. Social media, people are saying that Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce should break up. Like, okay, who are these people? Well, there was an account with 14 followers that tweeted it out. Oh, okay, why is that news? Well, it's because I want to say that Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce should break up because I want to date Taylor Swift, and I can't justify it. So I had to find this random anonymous account nobody's ever heard of. Like, okay, that's not journalism. You recognize that's not journalism, right? It's one thing when it's done in the realm of, you know, entertainment culture or whatever. But when it comes into the political world, and it happens all the time in the political world too, people are saying that this, that, and the other. It's usually the basis for questions for nominal Republicans when they appear on CNN and sometimes on MSNBC. The Morning Joe crew does love the people are saying thing. It's like, well, I heard a discussion the other day. Like, where was the discussion? Well, the discussion was amongst the bosses at MSNBC about how horrible Republicans are. Like, oh, okay. Yeah. It's also a rhetorical trick that people used to do. It's kind of, it got called out so effectively that Democrats seem to have stopped doing it. But Eric Swalwell used to do it all the time. He'd tweet out, like, my 5-year-old son was asking why it was that monetary policy not being tighter than it is not good for, and like, your kid didn't say that, dude. You don't, you had to look up half the words to spell in this tweet. You're not very bright. Your kid is not asking this. My child was very disturbed by what Florida did the other day when it came to Disney and the trans. Really? Your five-year-old's got a password to the Wall Street Journal and reading about what's going on in Florida? What a miserable kid you have. But it's just cover. It's a way to say, I overheard at the grocery store that somebody wishes that Nancy Pelosi would eat some bad clams and have to take a week off because she has to sit on the toilet. There's no guy at the grocery store. There's no guy at the grocery. There never is. There's no, some people are saying. If there were some people who are saying, they'd tell you, I was speaking to somebody very specifically, and here's who they are, and here's what they said. That's what journalists are supposed to do. Well, at least what they were supposed to do. Now they can just sit there and try and justify their own progressive activism and anti-Semitism by using it as covers. People are saying, but she slips up and says, I mean, people, not me at all. Maybe it's not that blatant, but it stuck out to me.
Many people have said that the action of bringing police into a group of people who are already feeling that they are sort of representative of the oppressed, who are inspired by what happened with George Floyd in 2020 and seeing what is happening in Gaza, that has only really acted as a catalyst here. And so I wonder at the wisdom of bringing in the armed police into what is essentially a university campus.
People are saying, I've heard a rumor, saw some things, one questioning the wisdom, as a whole bunch of kids who can afford $90,000 a year for college are, you know, their parents are wealthy, they're the privileged few going to an Ivy League school, members of Congress, all that, they're representing the oppressed. Really? Because, I don't know, if you hate capitalism, but you love your trust fund, I think maybe you're sort of misunderstanding what it is. I think maybe you've been miseducated at some point in your life. But don't you love it? People are saying that everything that the liberals are saying, the police are escalating these things by doing what? By coming into the area, by going in there and existing. Why is enforcing the law escalating? How the hell is enforcing the law escalating? They never answer that. They never ask that question. It's CNN. This is CNN. And they don't ask those sorts of questions. But I get a huge kick out of the idea that she's sitting there going, other people have said, who? People, stuff, and things? That these wealthy, spoiled kids who just happen to be off white. They're not. There's a lot of them who are white. There's a lot of them who aren't white. And they focus on the ones who aren't white. And like, I don't care. They're rich, right? It doesn't really matter if you're, you know, rich and tan, rich and Asian, rich and dark skinned, light. It doesn't matter. You're rich. You're a child of privilege. I know that's not how the left will allow you to use that word, but that's what the word means. So let's use it the way it's supposed to be used. And then, well, the police are going to come in. That's escalating it. Remember that in your next hostage situation. Police, go away. You're just escalating. What are you doing here? You're escalating this situation. Stop escalating this situation. You're causing problems. Your mere presence here is causing problems. Now go get my ransom money and leave me alone. you monster. Well, Jonah Goldberg comes back and he turns into sort of a Jonah Goldberg of old. And he points out that basically, you know, no one is calling out the left for their hypocrisy. He talks about how he used to call out, he makes himself a little bit of a martyr. I used to call out all the anti-Semitism on the right. Okay, great. It's a guy that you never heard, Nick Fuentes. The only time I ever heard of Nick Fuentes, by the way, is when people were pointing out that he's a horrible monster. He's never been like somebody who was of prominence or whatever. The only context I've ever heard of him is people saying he's a monster, which to me makes him just the side of a straw man. He's an idiot. He's dumb. He says stupid, racist things. But he was never a person of prominence, not with anybody who mattered. But just sitting there going, no, he's an example of this. He's not an example. You called him out. You built him up as something so you could knock him down. Congratulations. Meanwhile, there are actual elected members of Congress over there on the left that are taking up anti-American positions. You might want to point that out. Instead of, you know, patting yourself on the back so hard, you might as well, you're going to need Tommy John surgery. But listen to Jonah Goldberg call out the left.
I question the wisdom of having a double standard that says it's okay to shout hateful terror pro-terrorist things at Jews, but you can't. You have to have
total. No one's endorsing that.
A lot of people are endorsing that. A lot of people aren't condemning it. Yeah, a lot of people aren't condemning it. And I agree with you. Universities and the Democratic Party and the left have a huge problem trying to figure out how to cut this Gordian knot that they've created for themselves. But that doesn't mean I have to sort of condone or not call out. I got a lot of scars from calling out horrible statements on the right over the last 10 years. I call out anti-Semitism and bigotry all the time on the right.
Of course.
I don't hear a lot of that from sort of squad-adjacent type people calling out this stuff on the left.
You don't hear a lot of it. You don't hear any of it. You don't hear any of it. They don't talk. There are Americans being held hostage right now. Americans are being held hostage right now in Gaza by the terror. Now, they claim they don't have, maybe they killed them all. We don't know. They probably did. But you don't hear about them. The families care about them. Democrats don't. The squad doesn't. They don't give a damn. They might as well. They're inconvenient. They make it difficult. They make it awkward. But now they go, oh, you got a mass grave. There's a mass grave. That's obviously, they go running in there and they're executing civilians. Really, why would Israel go in? Just think about it logically. Just think about it logically. If Israel just wanted to indiscriminately kill civilians, they could act like Hamas. They could indiscriminately bomb the hell out of Gaza. Right, they know where the civilians are. They could bomb them. Why would they go into areas where hostages are held, round up people, all in public, daylight hours, world can see, execute them, zip tie them, strip them down, throw them in a mass grave? Why would you do that when you could just bomb from the air if that's what you wanted to do? It's been 30,000 dead for a while. It was 30,000 dead pretty damn quickly, and then it's been 30,000 dead for a while. They tried 50,000 for a couple of minutes, and they're like, nobody's. Where are the bodies? 30,000. It was 30,000. And they dialed it back. They don't tell you it's mostly women and children. Really? Can you prove that in any way, shape, or form? Or do I have to take the word of a terrorist organization that proudly launched the attacks of October the 7th? If I have to take your word for it, I've got to tell you, you being a murderous, bloodthirsty group of mongrels, you're just not super credible on the issue. You're just not super credible on the issue. And I don't care who you get to repeat the lie. It's where the lie originated from. That's the problem. You guys were the ones who told us the hospital. They blew up a hospital, 500 people. I mean, well, they blew up a Peugeot in a parking lot. It's the same thing as 500. That car was that doctor's pride and joy. He said he loved that car more than he loved 500 people. So that's where we came up with the number. Oh, okay. But it was your own rocket. That's neither here nor there. You just watch these people twist themselves into pretzels, lie, cheat, make things up, distract, justify. I mean, if you're ignoring paragliding into a music festival and randomly shooting people in the crowd, if you're ignoring, there's a certain part of you that is evil. It's just really, it is evil. You go back, well, they've killed a whole bunch of people who are used as human shields, and you don't have a problem with that. You don't have a problem with the people who use people as human shields. You don't have a problem with that. The paragliders killing randomly, you're cool with. The raping, well, there's no evidence of rape, except for the fact that they, you know, videotaped themselves raping girls and then killing them. But other than that, you're right. There's no evidence whatsoever, aside from all the evidence they themselves put out there. I tell you what should happen at these Ivy League schools, at all of these universities. There's no Republican anywhere near power, so it won't happen. And no university administrator has any testicular fortitude to do it. But some group should try to do it. Maybe Charlie Kirk's group out there. They've got money. You get a big projector. You get a couple of bed sheets. You get a couple of projectors. You get a couple of sound systems. You go on the roofs of the buildings around or maybe into some of the buildings. You throw out the bed sheets and you hang them on just plain white bed sheets. And you play that 45-minute video that they showed media people of video shot by Hamas on October 7th. Show the brutality. Show the people being slaughtered, beaten to death, shot, raped, just eviscerated, sliced up. It's disgusting. These kids in the quad, they'll throw up. They will be changed forever. And remind these people, show these people that they've never seen because it's never been broadcast on American television and they would not seek it out online. Show these people what they're protesting on behalf of. Show these people what they're defending. When they scream, "We are Hamas," show them who they claim to be. Let them see it. Let them eat it. Let it haunt their dreams. We'll find out if any of them are human beings, decent human beings at all or not. Force them to eat their vegetables. Force them to take their own medicine. Force them to see what they're on the side of. And then let them try to do the both sides-ism or whatever it is they try to do, or see how quickly that area cleans out, if only so people could go and vomit or cry or call their parents or whatever. Show them what they're defending. Universities probably wouldn't allow that, though. You can scream at people. You can block access to everywhere, but you can't show these leftist little fascists the truth. That's a bridge too far. By the way, we have an update on the squatter thing. So a lot of states are moving against squatters since we've seen a whole bunch of stories. Governor of Georgia, Brian Kemp, signed an anti-squatter bill recently. New York State is Arizona. Katie Hobbs, the governor out there, vetoed an anti-squatter. It's a bipartisan bill, but no, can't do that. It is, I don't know how anybody can be against this stuff. I honestly don't know how anybody can be against, you know, ending squatting. It takes a special kind of stupid to go, you know, well, what about the rights of the, I don't really care about the rights of it. Somebody's going to get killed if you care so deeply about it. Somebody's going to get killed. Well, I don't care. Something awful is going to happen. And honestly, I hope that it happens to the squatter. That's really what I hope happens. It's to the squatter because I don't want the honest person to be hurt. It's always these jackets. Well, I have Jack in the Box delivered here back in June, so that means I live here. Really? I just switched my phone bill to here, my cell phone bill, so there you go. Every one of these people, there's a special place in hell for them, and it should precede eternity with a long stint in jail. honestly. Now, New York, which sort of sparked this, is even making some changes. You know, it's bad when New York is doing it. The UK Daily Mail, an alleged squatter accused of living in a $1 million home while earning money by renting out bedrooms to others, has finally been charged. Brian Rodriguez was indicted on Thursday on charges of burglary, grand larceny, criminal possession of stolen property, criminal trespass, and criminal mischief. Homeowner Adele Andalorio, I think, has been checking on the home in Flushing, Queens, in February that she inherited when she realized the front door had been changed. Prosecutors say that over several days, Andalorio witnessed Rodriguez inside the property, and he claimed he was leasing the property. Andalorio is said to have saw several others living in the home, with one leaving the door open. After gaining entry, she changed the locks to gain back access. After Rodriguez returned, he had Andalorio dramatically handcuffed and let off the $1 million property after claiming that he was the legal tenant. We played you this audio at the time. It's really just sad and pathetic that this is what the world has come to, that the United States of America, remember, she got run off. It take a couple years to get squatters out, depending on how you do it. But now the politicians are recognizing that this is a losing issue for them. Rodriguez had previously claimed that he was the victim of a fraudulent business deal and would leave if he was paid $18,000. A handful of alleged squatters in the four-bedroom home claimed that they were legitimate residents of the property who had been paying rent to someone named Jay. Jay turned out to be Rodriguez, who previously told the New York Post that he was scammed into renting the home with a fake lease drawn up by a fraudulent realtor. He claimed he went into business in an attempt to cash in on what he thought was a city-run program that pays landlords $1,000 a month to take in migrants, but no such program exists. Rodriguez wanted Andalorio to pay him the $18,000 he put in on repairs in the plumbing, electrical work, paint job, and cleaning he claims he paid for. Somehow I highly suspect that the rooms in that house, while there is a distinct smell, it will not be that of fresh paint. Just speculating. In his telling of events, Rodriguez was scammed by a well-dressed man in a Flushing laundromat who he met last December and promptly agreed to go into business with on a house he could lease and rent out rooms in. Everybody knows that successful businessmen dress up well and hang out in laundromats. I believe that's how Amazon was founded. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But the man, Ronnie Ferg, claimed to be a real estate broker and offered Rodriguez a lease for the four-bedroom, two-bathroom, 1,646-square-foot home to which Ferg had a key. $1 million for 1,700 square feet, being generous, rounding up? That's nuts. The lease was signed for an agreed-upon $3,200 a month, and Rodriguez subsequently began renting out rooms in the home. Quote, I rented the rooms to local people who needed places to sleep. They work for Uber and Instacart and can't afford $2,000 a month for an apartment. Some pay $900, some pay $1,000, he said. It's a hell of a money-making business. It was a scam. What happened to your money, and why do you need $18,000 to get out of it? Sounds like you're getting a bunch of other suckers to cover your payments. Andalorio previously told ABC 7 New York, quote, it's enraging. It really is. It's not fair that I, as the homeowner, have to be going through this. Andalorio was arrested for changing the locks, which is illegal under New York City's eviction law. In New York State, squatters who occupy a property openly and adversely for 10 uninterrupted years can make an adverse possession claim, provided they have paid property taxes over the decade. In New York City, however, squatters are granted rights after just 30 days, meaning landlords must start an eviction proceeding as soon as the squatter has been discovered. You talk about a system designed to benefit the criminal. That's what the Democrats are. And there's pictures of all the very... It's amazing how these people have money for clothes and they wear name brand clothes and they've got the labels on. I don't wear anything with labels blasting in there. Like, I'm not a billboard for you unless you're paying me. But these people, they can afford designer clothing, but apparently not a toothbrush and some floss. Just, I mean, meth doesn't, I don't think meth, I'm not an expert on meth, but I don't believe that meth causes your teeth to fall out. I think meth causes you to not care that your teeth are falling out. I think that meth causes you to not maybe brush your teeth as much as you probably should. District Attorney Katz said criminal charges will be pursued when you unlawfully occupy someone else's home. You cannot just enter a home and claim you have a right to stay. You cannot first enter a home without permission and then stay without permission and later claim vested rights simply because the legitimate owner is unaware or has been unable to remove you for 30 days. That's exactly the law, dude. That's exactly the law. The defendant in this case is alleged to have entered and stayed in this home unlawfully. He has now been charged with burglary and grand larceny. Well, good. It's about damn time. But why was this woman arrested 2 months ago? And just now, it's coming around to this. If convicted, Rodriguez faces up to 15 years behind bars and was ordered to return to court next month. Is he still? Now, I don't know. It's not answered in this. But I wonder if this guy is still living in the home while this case is being adjudicated. I wonder if this guy, and I sort of know the answer to this question, I wonder if this guy paid taxes on his Airbnb of this house to the crackhead community. Something tells me if you're a squatter, you're not a stickler for paying your taxes. Right. As somebody just went through the paying of taxes, which, you look at all these people and you go, why are they able to get away? It's enough to make you go, why am I paying taxes like a sucker? Why am I paying through the nose like a sucker? When all these other people just skirt the system and you think, boy, if these people would just burn half the calories to something legitimate, they could take over the world. They could be wildly successful. But they don't. They know the law. They're experts in the law. But only insofar as it allows them to exploit loopholes in it so they can be as lazy as possible. They can be a degenerate, like a very compliant degenerate. It's just, I don't get it. You look at it and you go, why don't you work? You're capable of working. You're capable of doing all these things. Why don't you do them? Then you can avoid jail time. I don't really care. Have you ever smoked meth? I tell you, meth is awesome. So, but if you quit the meth, think of what you'd be a captain of industry. Captains of industry have to be somewhere before noon. I don't want to be anywhere before noon. Just bizarre. Throw the book at them. Literally throw the book at their heads, make it a big book, and try to hurt them with the book as you throw it at them. So at least, I mean, even New York is making strides on squatters' rights. We'll see how it works out. This guy being charged, the judges in New York City are currently throwing the book at Donald Trump, and they're writing the book as they do, because it's nothing that Donald Trump did that was against the law, and the things that they're accusing him of doing, the statute of limitations had run out on, so they're rewriting that part of the book. But these people, they skirt the system, they get nothing. I'll be curious to follow up on this and watch it. Speaking of stupid government, Bill Nelson is this exchange. I don't know the context, but there's no real good context. Bill Nelson was an astronaut. He was a senator from Florida. He's a very wealthy man. he's always kind of sounded dumb. And I know that sounds bigoted and it sounds like I'm judgy. And it's only because I'm judgy and he's a dumb man. But it, honestly, when you hear his voice, you'll go, this guy sounds dumb. This guy, because he is. He lost. Who did he? I think he might have lost to Marco Rubio. I think he lost his Senate seat to Marco Rubio. And then Democrats, of course, take care of their own. He was appointed the NASA administrator. I believe he was appointed the NASA administrator by Barack Obama. Why he wasn't fired during the Trump administration, I don't know. But it is sort of a good old boys club down there. And watch, they take care of each other. And let's face it, the NASA administrator is not all that important. But especially since Obama gutted NASA. And he's a figurehead. He's a former astronaut, et cetera, et cetera. And he's a very wealthy man. So he's a Democrat in good standing. And you don't have to be intelligent or honest to be a Democrat in good standing. You just have to be a Democrat in good standing. And so you've got this situation where they're holding a oversight hearing, NASA. And the voice for the member of Congress question is David Trone. He's the congressman here. He's running for Senate. Just an awful human being. He's the one who accidentally lets... Well, first, when I saw this clip on social media, I thought, did Trone let another racial slur slip? Because he's been known to do that. Oopsie, just spewed out a racial slur like it's something he says all the time. Really no heat for that either. Really no consequences for that. Guy drops an unambiguous racial slur. The guy's in his 60s and he goes, well, I didn't know. I misspoke. You misspoke? I can't wait to hear your policy speech about Niger, because I imagine that's going to be a hell of a thing right there. But no. No consequences whatsoever, because Democrats aren't serious about racism. See, I have no doubt that it was a mistake. The context tells you it was a mistake. The readiness to have that word chambered and ready to just go, and the casualness of not recognizing it as a problem, that's the problem. That's the weird thing. But there is not a single living Republican that would be forgiven if they slipped up and did the same thing or anywhere close to it. Nothing whatsoever. None. But David Trone, here's $100,000. Shut up. Oh, here's $100,000. Shut up. And all the so-called civil rights groups and activists go, okay, well, that's good. That sounds fine. Fair to me. Fair to me. $100,000. I don't know what the going rate is for a racial slur, a casual racial slur by accident. We'll call that a day. No amount of apology would ever inoculate a Republican. Anyway, I want you to listen to two dumb people. Filthy. This is a testament to white privilege, because it's two white dudes who, despite an IQ deficit between them, when you add their IQs together, have become fabulously wealthy in the United States of America. Realistically, it's a testament to the greatness of America, because in other countries, these people would have starved to death as teenagers if anything in their lives were based on merit. But they talk about the dark side of the moon. No, not the Pink Floyd album, but the literal dark side of the moon. There is one thing about the moon. There's one side of the moon that faces Earth at all times. It just happens to coincide with its revolving around the planet and its spinning on its axis. So that one side always stays, the same side always stays facing the side. It's not really the dark side of the moon, because that would mean that this side that faces us would be the light side of the moon. And as you can see, as the moon goes through its phases, this side of the moon facing us gets dark sometimes. It's just the far side of the moon would be a better way to describe it. But who the hell am I? I'm not NASA administrator or a United States congressman. I'm just an idiot who knows how things work. And China is sending probes to the dark side of the moon, the far side of the moon. And Bill Nelson thinks that we have no idea what's over there. Like there could be a city, like that's where Atlantis is hiding. Or it's just a very bizarre exchange. And you sit there and you go, these people are in charge of, this man in particular is in charge of billions of dollars, NASA funding. They're not sending the brightest over there.
And we're trying to get at what the Chinese are doing, you think, on the backside of the moon. Do you have any insights in that?
They are going to have a lander on the far side of the moon, which is the side that's always in dark. We're not planning to go there.
And why not? And what's the benefit of doing so?
We don't know what's on the backside of the moon, so that would be something that they would discover. But our decision is that it's more profitable for us to go to the south pole of the moon because we think that's where the water is.
Why do you think they made that decision? I'm curious.
I have no idea.
I have no idea. I don't know if we're going to go to the far side, the back side of the moon. Nobody knows what goes on over there. It's the side that's always dark, except for when, you know, it's light. And this side of the moon is dark. We don't know. I mean, well, we do actually know. Every single lunar mission that was launched during the Apollo, aside from satellites that we sent back there, that was launched during the Apollo missions, there were three people. Two went down to the moon. One orbited the moon while the other two were down on the moon. Orbiting for NASA Administrator Nelson means going around. I understand you used to be an astronaut, but I think you might have suffered some oxygen deprivation. Means to go around, which means that there was one person who took copious photographs as they. It wasn't just like, okay, Michael Collins in Apollo 11, you take a nap for a few hours as you circle the moon. Don't look out the window. Don't do anything. And because we don't want to ruin. It's like Christmas and knowing where the presents are hidden. You know, like a week before. Don't go in that closet. You don't want to ruin Christmas. Don't look at the dark side of the moon, the far side of the moon. We don't want to know what's going on over there. We'll save that for later. Billions of dollars this guy controls. Billions of dollars this guy controls. And he doesn't know the basics about his job, a job that he used to do before he was a United States senator. True story. In the last few minutes, why didn't you talk about the $95 billion? Because it's a done deal. It's a done deal. The president has signed the foreign aid package, as they're saying. Most of the money going to Ukraine, $60 billion out of $95 billion. Some money going to Israel, not a whole lot. Some money going to Taiwan, not a whole lot. I'm sure we'll discover all sorts of things hidden in there. Then you're like, well, why didn't they? Because they didn't want you to know. We all know the answer. It's like getting mad at the weather. It's not personal. It's just what it does. If you want to be mad about it, you got to change the people in Washington. It's that simple. I think we need to tell Ukraine, you need to figure out a way to make peace and figure out a way to make peace soon, or figure out a way to get your own money, because we're not going to fund you forever. You don't seem to be making any progress no matter how much money we throw at you. Russia isn't making any progress no matter how much money we throw at you. They're not being beaten. It doesn't matter. At a certain point, we have to recognize that we have dug ourselves in a giant hole. I don't expect that anytime soon from this crop of politicians. They're staring at $34 trillion in debt and going, you know what we should do is we should print more money and do anything and everything. That's just the answer to everything. You're a piggy bank to progressive politicians. You see it everywhere, up and down the aisle. We need to raise property taxes. Why? Well, because we've got to spend more money on this, that. Well, why don't you, I don't know, look at some of the huge amounts of money you're spending now and see if you can't save money. No, we couldn't possibly do that. Draconian. They always go to the worst case scenario. Say, well, how about you try and save money? What do you want to kill grandma and children? Is that all you do? Is that all the government does is prevent deaths of children and grandmothers? Like, is that it? Or maybe there's a whole series of layers of bureaucracies that could be, I don't know, eliminated cut down. Well, no, you're a monster if you even suggest. You want to cut money from education. Yeah, I do want to cut money from education. Why? You hate children? No. But if you look at it, if you just look at administrators at colleges, and most colleges are funded either directly or indirectly by the federal government. The student to administrator ratio. Pomona College is one example. This is from the Washington Post. In 1990, Pomona had 1,487 students, 180 tenured and tenure-track professors, and 56 administrators, deans, associate deans, assistant deans, and the like, not counting clerical staff, cleaners, and so on. As of 2022, not all that long later, the most recent year for which they have data, the Washington Post, the number of students has increased 17% to 1,740, while the number of professors has fallen by 5 to 175. The number of administrators has increased to 310, from 56 to 310, an average of 7.93 new administrators per year. That means from 1990 to 2022, the student body has increased 17%, tenured faculty had dropped 3%, and the number of administrators has increased 454%. What could possibly be the justification for that? Now you take that down to the school level, the public school level, and you get the same sort of thing. The levels of the superintendent, the assistant superintendent, the deputy superintendent, the deputy assistant superintendent, the this, that, and the other thing. They all have administrators working for them, and you sit there and you wonder how it was that somebody did this job by themselves not that long ago. It's like the captain of a ship. Well, we need a captain of ship, we need a sub-captain, assistant captain, deputy captain, another captain, a captain, captain, and this captain. Why? Why? Well, they all have different duties. No, they don't. Seemingly every layer of bureaucratic BS down lower is designed to take the burden off of the person up higher. At a certain point, you got four levels of bureaucracy. What do you need a captain for? If the captain never makes it onto the bridge, if the captain isn't, at some point, is the captain even on the ship? Maybe you don't need the captain. Maybe you don't need the deputy assistant captain. But if you look at all the layers of bureaucracy, and then they go, well, it's for the children. Why do you hate the children? I don't hate the children. I have children of my own. I love them very much. But you sit there and you look at the situation and you have to be realistic. Well, we've got to raise your taxes. Why? Because you don't want to make tough decisions. If you don't want to make tough decisions, get out of the job. Resign. Retire. Get the hell away from there. Whatever the case is, you aren't capable of doing the job. It goes back to the beginning of the show and the president of Colombia. If you are incapable of imposing consequences on a riotous mob on your campus, then get out of the job. If you are incapable or unwilling to protect the student body of your facility, and get the hell out of the job and let somebody in there who will do it. Your job exists to do this. If you cannot or will not, for whatever reason, cowardice, politics, whatever, it doesn't matter, I don't care, then get out of the job. If you can't or won't do it, get out. Sit there and go, oh, we need more money for the children. We need more money for the children. No, we don't. If you're spending $20,000 on average per pupil, and you got 20 kids in class, and they always say, well, we have too much crowding in schools. Too much, too many people. All right, well, in each classroom, $20,000 times 20 kids. That's $400,000 invested in every classroom, and that's probably low. You got to go, well, where's that teacher ain't getting $400,000. Where's the rest of that money go? Okay, you got to keep the lights on, but what else? Once you start unraveling that ball of yarn, you begin to recognize exactly what Democrats have done to our government to screw things up, and then that's the real danger. They don't want you to think about that. All right, that is enough for today, I say. Let's end it there on that cheery note. I just love these idiots, these God, you sit there and you watch this crap and you go, how do they live with themselves? Ruby sent me a thing. More employees and students. This is apparently from something called Minding the Campus. Recently read in the Wall Street Journal that Stanford University has more administrative staff and faculty than it did students. Specifically, there were 15,750 administrators, 2,228 faculty members, and 16,937 students. The paid help of 18,038 administrators plus faculty outnumbered the consumers, students, by 1,101. That gave me an idea for a stunning administrative reorganization. Give each student a paid concierge, an academic butler, if you will, to help navigate the pain of a collegiate living in Palo Alto. Yeah, or, you know, fire 90% of them and lower tuition. Something like that. Good God, we're so screwed as a society. Anyway, that is all the time we have for today. Tomorrow's Friday, and isn't that glorious? Looking forward to that very much. Don't forget patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast or DerekHunter.locals.com. Thanks for listening. I'll see you tomorrow.